one of the like the most amazing things for me about e-commerce is that it is genderless. It has no nationality. You cannot claim that you've been discriminated against in terms of where you are, who you've come from, your background, all those kinds of things. E-commerce, search engine marketing is a complete and total equalizer.
Hey everyone, welcome to the Click Collective podcast, I Started a Business, where we celebrate the journeys of e-commerce enthusiasts and entrepreneurs. I'm Andrew, your host, and in each episode, we shine a spotlight on one of our members. We'll dive into their business journey, why they started, how they're going, their highs and lows, and everything in between. In this episode, we sit down with Angatu Wild, the founder of The Salty Fox, who has built her business and team by combining a market demand for high-quality watch bands and accessories together with next-level customer experience and brand engagement.
Tell us about yourself and what you do.
My name is Angatu Wild. I'm the owner and operator of The Salty Fox. We sell Apple Watch bands and we've been doing so since 2015. I work with a pretty small team, but they're incredible, that helped me out at the warehouse in Click Kensington.
I have to say, I guess we've known you for a while at Click, which has been wonderful. And we've known your team as well, and they've been fantastic, and we'll get to some of them later.
Thank you.
So
my right arm and left arm.
Yeah, it's really wonderful to see. And we'll get into the sort of the family stuff a little bit later, but I'm very keen to talk about that.
Yeah.
Can you tell us a little bit about why you started into the Salty Fox and that product range? Because it's sort of evolved, but I'll let you talk about it a little bit from where you started from product and where you are now.
Look, I've started working in digital marketing, B2B, for a very large company in Melbourne. And I was just watching the B2C marketing department do all the really cool, fun, sexy things when it comes to marketing. And I was such a junior person, small cog, big wheel. And I didn't really feel like I had the opportunities to sort of make the decisions and do the things that I wanted to do. So when my husband, Sean, and I made the decision to move to Geelong, which is where he's from originally, to raise our family, I sort of took that as just a catalyst to sort of start my own business and to work in e-commerce. I wanted to run an e-commerce business. I didn't want to consult. I didn't really feel like I had the runs on the board to do that. So I just wanted to be able to sort of develop my skills within sort of e-commerce and retail, particularly in that market. So that's my reason for sort of working for myself.
Yeah.
And the reason why we started off selling men's accessories was I was looking for a product that was going to be a very low barrier to entry, that was going to be that was really underserviced online, that wasn't brand sensitive, and that I felt like I could do pretty well. So we started selling cufflinks, Apple Watch bands, and a whole bunch of other sort of accessories completely aimed at men.
Yeah.
But what we found over time was that the data was showing us that even though the end user was a man, or in most cases a man, our customers were actually women purchasing for men.
Yeah.
And a lot of the feedback we were getting was, we love your product. My husband, brother, cousin, they were just thrilled. It's a really great product. Do you happen to have it in pink? Do you happen to have it in rose gold?
Oh.
Yeah. And so that sort of developed the evolution of our business from firstly selling men's accessories, then selling accessories aimed at both men and women, and then focusing specifically on Apple Watch bands.
Oh, that's really interesting.
Yeah.
I remember when you had all of the cufflinks and that product, there's such a wide variety of product.
A nightmare.
And styles, and the number of SKUs must have been huge. For men's accessories, was there any particular desire that, apart from sort of the market analysis that you did, was there any, like, did you have any sort of affinity for that type of stuff? Or did you really like it when people had great accessories? Or was it just really like, it sounds like a really good technical analysis of the market. But I just wanted to hear from you whether it was there any sort of the fashion side of it that you were interested in as well? Or was it purely like market growth?
So from looking at sort of wider men's accessories, obviously, at the time, I was getting married, and so I was very heavily involved in what my husband was going to be wearing on our wedding day. So I had a lot of opinions about what I thought looked good on men. But It probably wasn't until we incorporated watch bands that was more aimed at women like myself that probably a bit more of my creative side has probably been able to sort of come out, where I can use the products myself too, that I can enjoy them.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah.
Now, I guess now that you're doing primarily Apple Watch bands, do you have to deal with any licensing stuff at all? Is there any requirements for that?
The answer to that is multifaceted. Mm. Firstly, we sell Apple Watch bands. That's what the product functions as.
Yes.
It doesn't work with a Fitbit, a Garmin, another watch. So it's really important that we don't confuse consumers into thinking that what they're purchasing for their friend or themselves is going to work with their smartwatch. So it's we can't really get away from saying Apple Watch. Like, say if you were a phone case company, a lot of them would have, like Caseify would have the word iPhone in the product
title. Yes, yes.
And they can't really get away from that, because you can't just purchase any phone case and have it fit on any phone. You really do need to say iPhone. Mm-hmm. So we combat any potential confusion by making sure that our product page and our website is very clear that obviously we're the Salty Fox, we're not affiliated with Apple.
Yep.
And so we make that very clear. You only have to go onto our website to see that there's, I mean, no crossover. Our aesthetic is completely different, and we service a niche within a subset within a niche of their customer base.
Yeah, absolutely.
So there's that too. Ultimately, Apple, if they really wanted, could shut down any third-party retailer from selling any accessories for their products. But they know what we know, which is that realistically our products and our brand and our business are doing a lot of the legwork in keeping Apple customers within that Apple universe. We keep them enjoying their products for longer and using and spending money on apps, which is their core business.
Well, on the product development side of things, how do you keep up to date with, like, what's trendy? Like, where do you find the inspiration for some of the designs?
It has to come from a lot of places. But ultimately, I wouldn't say that we are a fashion brand, in that we don't have things that sort of come in and then go. So we've got a core range of products, and it's huge, and they are there all the time. And then there's stuff on the periphery that come in and out with trends. And that's maybe, you know, I'm looking through my wardrobe or looking at Instagram and seeing outfits, looking at sort of the jewelry industry as well, and sort of just seeing if there's any synergies there between outfits, colours, and ways that our products can complement those things in the way that they put their outfits together.
Oh, that's really good. I guess it's a tough one, because there's so many varieties of watch band. I guess there's classic styles of watch band as well that are not made for Apple Watch, that you could sort of be like, oh, this could be applied to this format.
Yeah.
So, but I on the subject of this, I know that at least with some of the Apple Watch band's products, the tolerances are really hard for the manufacturing side of things. And I'm sure getting some of the products would have been a challenge as far as, like, quality control from some of your suppliers.
We've had to learn the hard way in this business that it's really you have to ask lots of questions. You have to do a lot of your own testing and product quality testing. So we work really closely with our suppliers, and we dictate the base metals that are used, the electroplating, the thickness of any plating, the colours, making sure that they are right with each batch. You can't just leave it to chance, because ultimately products which are, where you've got people who have cut corners, say, on what the base metal might be or how thick the plating might be, you end up with products that don't last, that can break, and ultimately shoddy bands end up in broken Apple Watches. So that's something that we want to avoid at all costs.
Absolutely. No, it's great to hear that you spend so much sort of time and effort on the QA side of things, because they are really finicky, and the last thing you want is a watch band that doesn't do the job, I guess.
Exactly. And that's probably why we offer a 12-month warranty. Yeah. So if we had no warranty, I guess, you know, it might not be an issue, but because we offer that warranty and we want to offer that warranty, then we have to be sure that our product not only is going to last 12 months, but that it's going to last for years and years and years.
Well, I guess on the same subject, that would obviously be a feature that sort of separates you from your competitors.
Yes.
In a really strong way, because I think there'd be very few people who would be, or very few companies who'd be offering a warranty on an accessory, essentially, especially sort of those other sort of unnamed sellers. Mm-hmm. So I would imagine that you'd get quite a few return customers, firstly, but also, I guess, what other features set you apart from your competitors?
You can't underestimate the value of providing a product warranty, because that signals to our customers that they can trust us because we trust our product. The other thing that we also do is we offer change of mind return guarantees. We'll refund you. If you don't like it, you can send it back. So I know that there are a lot of retailers out there for whatever reason, could be, you know, sometimes to do with a product, but could just be a business reason. We'll lock people into doing exchanges rather than being able to return an item for refund. And so I think that's a huge barrier to purchase. And it's probably something that will never change for us. The other thing that we do that probably makes us a little bit different is that looking at the sort of data of our new customers, we've noticed that Apple Watches is a growing market. So a lot of people who are coming to us for the first time are not people who have owned Apple Watches for a very long time. They may be very new to Apple Watches. They might not even know how to find their Apple Watch size. They might not know how to change their band. They may not know how to select the right size band for themselves. So we just make sure that the product page and our website has all the information they need. Firstly, so that they're not asking customer service the same questions over and over again, but that even after they purchase, we continually send them information on how to use their product and get the most out of it. So it just ensures that when they receive the product, it's not a matter of just looking at it going, oh, then what?
That sounds great. As the product started with male fashion accessories, but has now moved more into watch bands, or completely into watch bands, have you found sort of your audience has shifted from... I guess, as you said, it was women who were buying for men. Have you found that sort of your male and female size or unisex sizes have sort of spread out across the gamut of your sales over time?
Oh, okay. I see what you're saying. I would probably say we've retained those customers that we had in the beginning, but our new customers are probably women.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting shift. Here's a question that I guess has to do with sort of the mix of founders at Click that we see. The majority of founders at Click are women.
Yes.
What kind of challenges have you faced sort of running a company as a female founder? I don't want to have to expand too much on it because you did actually participate in our International Women's Day panel, which was excellent. And it was great to hear your perspective because I think you had a number of insightful points on that matter. But we wouldn't do the whole panel again. But
That's very kind.
Yeah.
It has not been easy, I think. I was very naive when I started this business about how possible it was going to be to have small children. I've got two young boys, as you know, they're aged 4 and also almost 4, and one's just turned 5. It has been a real juggle and a real challenge, and I benefit from the fact that my husband is a consultant, so he works from home. We can sort of juggle raising our kids in a way that perhaps two people who are working a full-time job couldn't.
Yeah.
I think a lot of women feel like as if there's a pressure to put your career on hold. And it's completely understandable. Working for yourself allows you to make all the rules on how often you work, on whether or not you work, on the terms under which you remain employed, and you can be very clear with all of your employees about how available you can be. So I guess for me, I just wanted to create a universe for myself in which I can still be very active within e-commerce but not rob my children of time with me. So it means that I am a mum first and a boss part-time.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, we can't really get away from that. And as I said before, you know, I feel like in some ways I do shortchange my staff a little bit by not being there and giving them the sort of boss that they deserve. But I'm very open and transparent with people during the recruitment process about how available I am, I live an hour and a half away from Kensington. So whilst I'm physically not there in the warehouse every day, I compensate for that by just blowing up people's phones, by being available on Zoom, by, you know, being on Slack and WhatsApp.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think that's probably how I manage it. In the early days, it was just me. I was a solo entrepreneur, so it was very difficult. I was handling the customer service myself. So, you know, it's not all roses. There were times where I was putting baby to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning with one hand through the bars of the cot and then with my other hand on the phone responding to customers' emails.
Yeah, wow.
You know, and customers were unaware of it. I in the early days, I was not very visible as the owner of the business. And so all they could see was just lightning fast customer responses and just shocked that they were getting a response at like 11 o'clock at night. But when you have babies. Yeah. Sometimes that's the only time you have.
Or you might also be up then as well. that sounds amazing. True. So I guess even with the challenges, you've kind of found a way to sort of reap the benefits of that flexibility while still being there for your team. As much as you're saying that there's a little bit of guilt about not being the boss that they may expect, but I think at least from our point of view, from Click, from the interviewer, we can see that your team is really coherent. They're really working together. Then they are really happy with the autonomy that they get from that balance between you being there all the time and sort of being remote.
I know. So. Well, it's music to my ears. If I'm hiring for someone and they're telling me that they're leaving their previous job because their boss just wouldn't give them a shot at taking a bit of extra responsibility, that's music to my ears because I will give you all the responsibility on autonomy that you want.
Yeah.
I don't micromanage because I cannot micromanage. I don't have the time to micromanage. So in that sense, you know, those kinds of employees do really well with me and within our business. But, yeah, again, during that recruitment process, I always try and be as transparent about, just not being there every single day. The way that perhaps maybe the perfect boss can be.
No, that's amazing. Really credit to you and credit to your team.
Thank you. We're very lucky. And also, don't forget, Gus works with me, who's my little brother. So in a way, it's sort of kind of like I'm still there, maybe.
How do the team go about managing such a large inventory? I think the thing is that even with the Apple Watch, there's a number of different SKUs or the different number of different models, including the Ultra now, which is really big. So it's a whole different range of products that you need to fit. And with the colors and material options that you have, it's a really wide range of products.
Yeah.
How do you go about managing that? I know that you have your team to do it, but tell me a little bit about all
that. Okay. So I would probably say that it has been a real struggle. It's been a real struggle managing so many different SKUs. Obviously, Apple's done their best to keep it as low as possible because even though they've had all these different releases of Apple Watches over time, they've kept the sizing to pretty much two sizes up until recently and now three. So, you know, there could have been eight sizes.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. You know,
because we're up to series eight now. So yes, there could have been eight or nine different sizes, but they didn't. And I'm pretty grateful for that. So that's kept our SKUs low. We used some pretty basic apps within Shopify to manage our stock, our inventory, and be able to sort of forecast. Mm-hmm. Now we're going through that process where we're sort of engaging consultants and looking at new software to do that. But it's software that really probably should bring in later on. So I wouldn't recommend it in the early days for small business owners. I can be transparent. We use Stocky, which is very, very simple. It's a Shopify app, and it's good for what it does. So, and there's some really excellent reporting within Shopify as well, too, that allows you to be able to forecast.
Okay, that's great. And then I guess leading on to that, I guess how do you tailor sort of marketing efforts to target different customer segments and what they need? Because as you said, you've got a shifting demographic of who's buying from you now. Yep. And so, I think you're an expert in that field. I'm not. But I'd love to hear a little bit of a short...
Okay, so I guess the wisdom when it comes to marketing has always been to remain consistent. And we try our best to do that with regards to font and colouring and that sort of thing, so that when people see an ad, they generally know it's one of our ads. But you're right, our range is really big and it's really varied. We've got a whole range of active bands. So we've got a range of really sort of glittery diamante type bands. Then there's like super soft sort of scrunchy type bands. And all those types of products appeal to a different types of people. And so that means the ad copy changes, the targeting on your meta advertising changes, the imagery changes significantly, whether or not you feature men or women or just women or just men, the imagery changes. And it's really important, not just in my industry, but for any small business to try different types of photography, videography, and see what works with their customer base. We've come to some conclusions, but we're still sort of working it out. And so, you know, if you're following us on Instagram and if you've seen our ads, you might see some different types of content. And that's just us sort of trying to find our way and see what works.
Okay. You mentioned Meta as obviously the overarching sort of social platform.
Yep.
What social platforms have been really effective in promoting your product? Is it Meta or is it Instagram, or does it depend on the type of product, and are you getting into using Threads? Is that sort of up and coming? And,
yes.
And there's obviously TikTok, which is huge,
yeah.
But I guess would be suiting a younger demographic. I know this is a very broad question
because
we're talking a lot of different platforms, but please have at it.
Okay, so we're a business that began its life on Google search advertising, Google AdWords to be specific. So obviously SEM and SEO, or search engine marketing and search engine optimization, are very important to us. Mm. And that will dictate things like product titles, product descriptions, your entire website. I come from a place of privilege in terms of my ability to be able to get the best out of search engine marketing because, full disclosure, my husband previously worked for Google, so he had those skills there to be able to sort of give me a little bit of a leg up within search engine marketing. Mm. But Meta, which we've only recently started doing, is incredible for us. With no surprise, obviously, that's where our customers are. Mm. And we've been sort of playing around in there, like I said, sort of trying different types of imagery and content and copy. And it's worked really well. The thing that I probably would say that I've realized is that ads can get stale. So it's really important, much the same as our inventory, to give people variety.
Yeah.
And we gave TikTok a red hot crack. And it was probably one of my biggest failures as a business is foray into TikTok. It hasn't worked for us. And I don't know if we're handicapped because I'm older, so maybe I just don't understand TikTok as much. But we did leave it to what we engaged an external company to sort of help us create the content that would be on TikTok. But I think in order to do TikTok well, probably have to not be us. It didn't work for us.
Yeah.
So I had to fail quickly.
Yeah.
And quit on it quickly. Yeah. Pinterest is something that is probably I've pegged that for next year.
Yeah.
But I think that that's something that could be good for us. But I'm only one person, so I have to be conscious of how much time I spend scrolling.
Yeah.
So once I've sort of ticked off Instagram and we've got it humming with the other people that work with me, then we can sort of take on that new project.
Mm. Well, it sounds like you've got a really good base of knowledge when it comes to marketing in general anyways.
Thank you.
So it's being able, I guess you can sort of evaluate each platform as it comes along through sort of experimentation, measuring. And then also, I guess the thing that you mentioned that was really important is deciding when to cut something off, when something's a failure at this time. It doesn't mean that a business can't pick it up later, but that you've made the decision to say, we're going to stop here. We'll keep going with what works. And we might pick that up at a later date, but this is not for us at the moment. I think that's really smart because it's hard to make those decisions to cut something off as far as marketing because as I think you might have brought up in our panel before that some of these marketing budgets can get addictive.
There is an endless amount of money that you can spend not only on consultants but on advertising as well too. So you have to be really, really smart about how you do your advertising. I am not a massive fan of just broadly scattergun approach showing your ads to absolutely every single person. You want to try and be as targeted as you can. It's better to show your ad to 1,000 really engaged people than it is to 100,000, 1 million people who don't really care about your product.
Mm.
The best people are not people who haven't purchased from you yet. They're the people who've purchased from you already.
Mm.
The customer lifetime value of your customers can always go up.
Mm.
And you have to stay top of mind. You need to email your customers very regularly. Mm. And I don't mean like once. I mean, we've got a really big range of products. And so I'm cognizant of the fact that a lot of people have come to our website from a Google ad.
Yep.
They've landed on a product page and they've made a purchase. Mm. They never looked at a collection page. They had no idea that that exact same product came in like 15 different colors.
Yeah.
And so that is where our email marketing comes in. And we can send that particular person targeted emails that will show them products that would be of interest to them from our range. Mm. They've already experienced our product. They understand our process. They're already a customer of ours. They're free.
Yeah.
Well, almost free.
Yeah,
you
still
have to pay.
Yeah, but you still have to pay.
They're almost free. But they're so much cheaper than bringing in new customers. So, if there's anything that I could probably impart to people is that if you've got a customer database, if you're not sending them emails, you need to do it. And you need to do it really regularly, not just around sales times, but like you need to be sending them emails like, weekly at least.
Yeah.
At least weekly.
Yeah.
Particularly if you work in retail.
Yeah. Well, that's really great advice. And, really great learnings. Have you tried influencer marketing? Now, it's a sort of a big topic, and it's always a bit of a weird one, I guess, because it varies so much from business to business and whether that suits or not. Does that suit the Salty Fox? Have you tried it?
I would probably say that the best content that sells our products is good quality content that heroes a product. So there's no influencer, whether they've got like 5,000, 10,000, 50,000, 500,000 followers, there's no influencer that's going to move the needle for us. I'll keep it really just to us because I can't make generalizations around other industries.
Yeah.
Particularly for me, there's no influencer who's going to move the needle in terms of revenue for us.
Mm.
What influencers or I guess more content creators bring to the table is the ability to create different, new, interesting quality content that you can then use in your ads or show on your website or product page or that kind of thing to sell your product. But simply relying on the strength of the database of an influencer is probably not going to work for a lot of people.
Yeah.
You really have to make it work for you. We don't pay for UGC content. We've tried sort of using models and that kind of thing. It doesn't work that well.
Yeah.
The best content probably comes from our customer base, and we like to reward them with occasional giveaways. So they'll post images or post videos, they'll tag us, and then once a month we'll drop into someone's DM and give them a $100 gift voucher.
Oh, that's amazing. that's really smart. It's sort of, I guess, apart from the emails, keeping everybody engaged with the brand and new styles, that giveaway can also keep them engaged with actually posting on socials and interacting with the brand on social media. So that's a really good way to sort of keep people really invested. With customer reviews and sort of negative feedback, you were mentioning that the way that you handle customer service was really getting on top of those customer queries as quickly as possible responding to them in almost all hours, and in some cases all hours, which is really amazing. But how do you deal with the negative feedback stuff? You did mention the warranty and the refund process, which actually sounds really encouraging. It sounds like it makes the transaction really easy. But when you get sort of those negative reviews, how do you deal with that?
I love turning negative reviews into positive reviews. There's plenty of people who have left us negative reviews but remain customers of ours because we've dealt with it so well.
Yeah.
But particularly on social media, provided that the person has left a comment that's not hate speech or misinformed, if it is, then we have to remove it
Absolutely.
For the health and happiness of our staff and anyone who might be seeing that comment. If that's a genuine issue that we've caused, then you have to respond not only for that customer, but for anybody else who could be seeing that comment.
Mm.
The temptation is one, to slap back, or two, to delete.
Mm.
But people will see that.
Yes.
And they will judge you.
Yeah.
So it's best not to sweep it under the rug. I always stay positive, always stay calm, and address their concern. Never reveal anything private. Take it offline if you have to. Mm-hmm. If they need to give you an order number, or you need to make a comment about maybe information they gave on for their address or something like that. They just want to be heard. And the great thing about a positive response that ignores all sarcasm is it completely takes the wind out of the sails of people who might be either a customer who might be leaving a negative comment, but someone who doesn't know you, who might just want to be a little bit sarcastic or cheeky about an ad. So I'm not scared of negative comments. In fact, they are the minority, the majority, and I'm really surprised by this, is so many people will comment on our ads on Facebook and just say things like, I just ordered mine yesterday. It was so cool. I really, really love it. And that blows me away, because I would never comment on a brand's Facebook ads, but these people do, and so I'm very grateful to them.
That's amazing. That's kind of, it's a relatively rare engagement, I guess, that type of engagement, because I think from what you see, even from really like large brands, is that they'll post something on Facebook and there'll be no responses. No, there might be a couple of laugh reacts, but there's going to be no genuine interaction with it or sort of the viewer hasn't sort of invested, because they've invested sort of time, right?
Yeah.
And they're sort of, I guess, revealing themselves as a customer through those platforms by commenting on the ad. So that's really valuable, and it shows that, I guess, the Salty Fox is providing such a great product.
Thank you. Yeah, look, I think because we're a product that you'd wear on your arm every single day, so they'd be engaging with us on a daily basis. So, you know, it's not, wouldn't be uncommon to think that they would be wearing their watch band right now whilst leaving that comment. So yeah, I am pretty grateful that people take time out of their day. And every so often, sometimes if someone does leave a negative comment, that you will have people that come in and defend you a little bit, which is really kind.
That's really nice.
It is good. And I feel so lucky and so blessed because our customers have been the nicest bunch of people that I could have anything to do with. And I've never met any of them, but they are just beautiful.
That's so wonderful. Well, hopefully a number of your customers are listening to this eventually when we publish it. So, and they'll hear how much love you've got for them.
Yeah, so. We do. We're so grateful to them because honestly, they've not only made my life better, but they've allowed me to create opportunities for the other young people who might be wanting to work in e-commerce or digital marketing or warehousing. So they've had a huge impact.
That's great. So what tools on the Salty Fox do you find are really, really helpful to sort of improve that engagement and improve that trust that you're getting from your customers, sometimes for the first time, sometimes from returning customers? Or what are the best tools that you've got for that?
Okay. It's really important to answer any single potential barrier that a customer might have about purchasing with you. Is shipping going to be too expensive? Then you need to have information about there about what the threshold is for free shipping. How fast am I going to get it? You need to have that information on there. Is this company legit? Which is very hard because online you don't know. Is it a scam? I'm not sure. Obviously, our About Us page, you know, has me, a real person, on there. But we also rely on our customers to show potential customers how good we are, how good our product is, and how happy they are with their product. So our reviews are published on the product page for the product which they were reviewed on. And we also encourage our customers to submit images or videos with their reviews. And we publish those too on the product page. And even though those videos are low quality, terrible angles, bad lighting, they're real. And to a person who has not seen a shop that says the Salty Fox or ever had any engagement with our brand, that social proof proves to them that we're real. We're not just sending their money off into the ether and never going to get that product, and B, the product is good, and C, the product is so good that our customers are writing about it and our customers are submitting photos. You can have as many pretty pictures as you like, but that social proof from your customers, those reviews, even if they're just text-based reviews, they make a really big difference. So it's really important that you look at your entire website and at your product pages specifically from the perspective of someone who has not purchased from you before. Do not expect them to go through your entire website to get all the information that they require. If they need to click more than two times, that's too many. Yeah, have an FAQ, have a really easy way of submitting returns. Don't make it hard for them to send something back. And if your business can allow it, even if you can just trial it, please offer people change of mind returns. It's really important. You will find that very few people will take it up if your product is good.
I guess now we'd want to talk about your team. I guess you and your team and the dynamic that you have at Click. Now, from our perspective, right, we've been working with your team for a number of years now, and we've loved everybody who's worked for you and with you. They've always been lovely. They've always been incredibly easy and good to deal with. I think that's a credit to you as the founder. To find and hire the right people and also sort of have them interact in a way that represents your business, even if it's internally, with both each other and with us here at Click. And we just wanted you to talk a little bit about your team and,
Look, can I just say, I love my team. And the great thing about it is that we're growing. We've hired a few new people, and so we've got Nicole, who's been with us for a little while now in customer service, but she's moved up into e-commerce. She's absolutely incredible. Have you met her?
Yes.
Really?
Yes.
Okay. Well, she's young, she's intelligent, and she's going to go so much further than me. Watch that space. I've got Gus, obviously, who's my brother. Absolute gun, works so hard in the warehouse. And we've hired some newbies, Jacob, who will be working in the warehouse. Ironically, that's also the name of my oldest son.
There's no bias there when you were hiring.
There's no bias. And we've got Andrew, who's been with us as a casual, but he has come on board full time with us. So, you know, and we've just hired Amy in the warehouse and customer service. She hasn't even started yet.
Oh, my gosh.
But she is, I mean, just from that interview process, sitting with Nicole and interviewing her, she's so incredible. She's so smart. And the great thing about a lot of the people who sort of started with us and worked with us is they're all so entrepreneurial.
Mm.
They have dreams and hopes of wanting to start businesses of their own one day. And I know this partly from the interview process, but also from when someone starts with me, I spend a little bit of extra time in the beginning sitting down with them, working out what they need, why they left their previous job,
mm-hmm.
how can we make things more amazing for them now,
yeah.
and what motivates them.
Yeah.
For some people it's really easy, it's money,
yeah.
you know, and so that's a language I can speak and I understand very well. But for some people it's more nuanced. They're looking for a mentor, they're looking for responsibility that they never had before. Mm. They're looking for someone to give them a go. And sort of working at the Salty Fox, partly because of necessity and partly because it's my non-confrontational management style, I am not in any way a micromanager. So you will get really vague descriptions of what I want done. And then I will allow you to work your magic and make it happen. And then hopefully what you imagine and what I imagined is exactly the same.
Yeah, that's great. and that starts at the beginning when you're sort of training new people and bringing them on. So that does take a lot of work, and it takes experience and sort of it takes making mistakes in the past to be able to sort of find the right way to do that. So
it's a real temptation, I think, just working on your own to think that I'm the only person that can do this exactly as it's supposed to be. You have to let go. You have to show people the basics of what it is that you do. You need to expect them to get it maybe 80% right, and then you need to let go of that 20% and not ride people about that. And then over time you'll find that the people that you hire that work with you or that are consultants that work for you, they're better than you at what they do. I could never go back into the warehouse and pick, pack and manifest. Now I'd stuff it all up.
Yeah.
Nicole is 10 times better at handling the customer service. Mm. And I'm sure that Amy will be, because these people are just absolute guns at what they do.
That's great. Working with family can obviously be a bit of a challenge. And even from my own personal experience, there's been some definite challenging moments working in a family business. What do you find sort of the pros and the cons for that? Is it easy to separate the two? I mean, I guess your brother, Gus, lives closer to Kensington than you do. So at least you don't have to sort of cross over that much as far as outside of hours. But how do you find it?
I'd say probably working with my brother. He's the warehouse manager. I can be more straight with him than perhaps you could be with someone who was not a family member. Mm. So I could be incredibly transparent, incredibly honest with him and brutally frank with him about my expectations.
Mm.
And I know him well enough to know that that is his communication style, and that's what he prefers and that's what he likes. I don't bring that to the office.
No, of course
not. Because it would be incredibly uncomfortable for anyone that works with us for me to see me in that way. Yeah. So I have to be super even. I have to be very even-handed. I don't have arguments with my brother at the warehouse. And I would probably say that I have to err on the side of caution in terms of how everybody's treated. I need to make everyone feel like as if you are coming to me, that you're talking to your boss and not the warehouse manager's sister.
Yes, absolutely.
First and foremost. And so I make that very clear with people during that recruitment process, but also continually checking in with people about that as well too. Mm. So, yeah, but look, it is hard. Obviously, as you know, my husband does digital marketing work for us, and we live together. We have a family together.
Yeah.
And so it's important to ensure that we preserve that personal time, that we don't have conversations that are about work after hours when it should be time that we're actually spending with our family. But the tough part is he loves e-commerce and digital marketing probably more than I do, and in a lot of ways it's probably our love language. So
I'm sure that's not on the internet quiz of love languages at this point.
It is so refreshing having someone else to bounce off ideas from you. As in shopping online myself with other businesses, you can just completely, you can talk about your experience shopping with another brand in a way which I don't think I could with someone who wasn't working within digital marketing.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, so I guess, yeah, it is good and it's bad.
I had to say it. I guess balancing it is, it is a balance. It is, the act of balancing means that it's unbalanced at times, and which is fine.
Yeah.
But that's really encouraging to hear that you're working it out. It's not easy, but
it's a constant. It's so constant. We're going on holidays.
Amazing.
On Sunday.
This is also the dream of an e-commerce entrepreneur is to actually get a holiday at some point. So congratulations.
Yes,
that's a big
you.
Accomplishment.
Thank you. Thank you. And I try to do like a little bit of work on holidays, but ever since getting a sort of a team around me, it's been amazing to be able to just completely switch off, to just leave it to other people and know that when you get back, it's not going to be a complete dumpster fire. So...
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's been really good.
I guess as we sort of are going to wrap up, we'll talk about some of the milestones and achievements that you're particularly proud of with the Salty Fox and sort of launching that and running it and now growing it quite significantly. From interactions with the warehouse manager, he let me know that you crossed a really big milestone just recently.
Thank you.
Which is a big number. So, but I might let you talk about the big numbers that you're looking for the Salty Fox.
Thank you so much. Yeah, look, we... recently had our 100,000th order, which, you know, so incredible. And we're so grateful to every single customer who's been a part of that. Some of the biggest milestones I'd probably say was getting my first unit with Click.
Yeah.
It made the business just so real for me. It made me feel like as if it wasn't some fly-by-night operation, that it was something that was going to last and it had legs. Their business has grown a lot. You know, we're almost, 5 or 6 times the size that we were in the last couple of years. And
wow.
So it's been enormous. The other thing that's probably been a huge milestone for us has been the ability to, we've got this new signature range of bands, which...
Ooh, tell us more.
Thank you so much. It is the 18 karat gold and 18 karat rose gold plated.
Wow.
So I've been able to explore my creative side, but also just use all of the skills that we've developed over the last 8 years in selecting colours and working with materials to sort of come up with designs now that we're just like over the moon about.
Amazing. And I guess we won't sort of do much self-promotion about Click, but we just did want
to
ask.
You have to. Should.
What was it like being part of our International Women's Day panel?
Yeah.
And then a little bit about your experience with us.
Click Collective, and I cannot stress this enough, have been the sole reason that my business is the size that it is today. They have allowed me to be a part-time boss working from home whilst also running a warehouse by providing us with the facility, the space, and the support network to be able to keep the lights on and warehouse our product, keep our team motivated. Click provides so many perks that I could never offer on my own. As you know, obviously, they've got the Fruity Fox thing. So
yep, that's
so
great.
So we
keep Gus fed.
We keep Gus fed, yeah. So it's allowed me to sort of offer my team free lunches on a daily basis. It's one of the perks. That's what I do.
Wow, that's a great perk. That's amazing.
It is a good perk. I thought it was a good perk.
It's a really good perk. That's
Thank
very
you very
smart.
Much. Yeah. But that's all because of Click. The constant team building and motivation activities and networking that they do, putting us in touch with incredible suppliers. And, you know, on a personal note, during COVID when we thought that we just didn't know what was going to happen, Click supported all of the businesses in order to ensure that they were able to stay within Click and didn't go bankrupt during that period of time.
Yeah.
I mean, that is incredible. They just provide a one-stop shop for e-commerce brands and allow you to focus on your core business, which is building your empire, I guess, in some small sense. But yeah, I'm not bogged down with having to source a warehouse, having to fit out a kitchen, having to ensure that there's someone at reception and that there's a loading bay and you've organised like Australia Post and DHL. And all of the perks with that, like Click is amazing. I only wish that you guys were in Geelong.
We'll get there. We'll get there eventually as we sort of, I guess, work on our own empire in that case. Look, I guess wrapping up that, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
It's been great to sit down with you and actually finally have a chat, as sort of we've always been pretty busy crossing paths. Yeah, it's been really great to learn about business and sort of how much work and effort and love you've put into it to grow it to where it is now. It's really an inspiring tale. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you so much. Thank you, honestly. It's been an absolute pleasure, and I look forward to being a Click tenant for many, many years to come.
Great. All right.
Want to know more about where Hangatu runs her business? Click Collective is a warehousing co-working space built around the needs of an e-commerce community. On site, we have spaces for your warehouse, office, showroom, logistics, and a photography space. So we're a one-stop shop to run your business. You can head over to our website to know more at clickcollective.com.au or check out our Instagram at clickcollective.